To Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 31. That's where our lesson will come from this morning. Again, it's great to be here again. Thank you for inviting me back. It's good to be here with former teachers and former students and some current students. By the way, just to give you an additional endorsement, I think everyone who teaches in the Bible department that's had her would tell you you made a really good choice with Mackenzie. So I think you're going to be blessed by having her here. So Matthew 25, chapter 25, verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the angels with Him, He will sit on His glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the goats on His right, He will put the sheep on His right, and the goats on His left. Then the King will say to those on His right, Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go visit you? The King will reply, Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Then he will say to those on his left, Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. They also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? And he will reply, Truly I tell you, whenever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do it for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. I had this great opportunity one time when I was going out to a conference, and it was right before the Thanksgiving holidays. And so there happened to be some students going home for Thanksgiving, and it was Southwest Airlines, and you know how that works. So those of us that had A seats got to choose first, and so I was on the aisle. Somebody had already taken the window, and then, you know, those poor C people in the back who have to just take that middle seat. And I can see coming down the aisle this young woman in a Lipscomb sweatshirt. And sure enough, she's looking around, and she takes the seat beside me, and she has no idea who I am, that I'm a Bible professor at Lipscomb, so I see this as my chance. So, what do you think about the Bible department? I said, you go to Lipscomb? And she said, yeah. I said, they make you take Bible there, right? And she goes, oh, yeah. I said, so what do you think about the Bible department at Lipscomb? And to her credit, and thankfully, she was very pleased with her Bible classes. She hadn't had me, so that may explain it. But she was very pleased with her Bible classes. And so we talked a little bit more, and finally I said, yeah, I teach in the Bible department at Lipscomb. And the woman that was sitting by the window looks over and goes, that's mean, I guess. Now, I've had it thrown back on me before, because I one time was talking to a student, and I said, you know, I'd love somewhere, you know, through the semester just to sneak into the back of the classroom and sit and just listen to what students are saying about me. And she said, why would you assume they're talking about you? Okay, that's fair enough. You may have seen this TV show, Undercover Boss, where the owner or the boss of a company will go in disguise as an employee just to kind of see how things are going, how their company works, who's really working when nobody's kind of paying attention to them and that sort of thing, and to try to see what they're like just as a matter of course. Now, of course, they would act differently if they knew that the CEO of the company was the one standing beside them, right? But when they don't know that, you get sort of a sense of who they are, what their character's like. I used to work years ago when I was a teenager at Walmart, and this is when Sam Walton was still alive, and one of the great fears of all of our managers was that Sam Walton would come in incognito, which he was known to do, to just come in blue jeans and a flannel shirt and just kind of mill around the store and ask for help and ask questions to see how he was treated when nobody knew who he was, because that would then tell him how the employee's act towards others as a matter of course. And it seems to me that our parable here that Jesus tells is something along those lines where, though we might act differently had we known it was Jesus, Jesus basically says here, assume it's me, because it is me. And so our text comes at the conclusion of Jesus' discourse on the last days, his last major teaching discourse in the Gospel of Matthew. And basically what he's telling them in this is to be prepared, to be ready, to always live as though I'm coming. And not simply sitting back and kind of waiting for me to come, but to live and engage the world actively, but in such a way that you're serving me. And that whoever you're serving and whatever you're doing. And you might notice that the parable immediately before this is the parable of the talents, where you have the five-talent person and the two-talent person and the one-talent person. And when the master comes back, what's marvelous about that is that you'll notice that he commends those who have been active and engaged in what they were supposed to be doing. And they seem to have great joy that the master's there and that they get to show him this. And so we move into our parable, and it's now kind of the judgment scene. It's the last days. It's a scene of awe and glory as the Lord returns and the angels accompany him. And he's a king sitting on his throne ready to judge. And already that he's a king on his throne ought to remind us as we think about this idea of service and care for others is that when we serve our brothers and sisters, when we serve others, we're serving the brothers and the sisters of the king. These are Jesus' brothers and sisters. And so he is a king, but he's a shepherd king, kind of like David, one who watches over and cares for his flock. And the judgment is announced, and this is not a trial. This is not sort of laying out the evidence and this sort of thing. The decision has been made already. This is just announcing the decision. And he divides them. On his right hand, he puts the sheep, those who are blessed, those that he calls righteous. And on the left, he puts the goats, those who have not been doing what they've been called to do. And by the way, I apologize for this, but some of you are on my right, some of you are on my left. I tend to gesticulate. I don't know you well enough to know which side you actually belong on, and you chose where you sat. So this is not personal. All right, so he's got the sheep on his right, the goats on his left, and their position depends on how they have lived, the character that they've shown throughout their life by what they did. So those on the right are those who are blessed, those who are called righteous, those who are going to get to take their inheritance. And those who are on the left are the accursed whose acts or lack of them puts them in line with the devil and his angels. And we know that other things will come into play as that decision is made, as our future is announced. Things like faith and love will play in as well. But just remember that Scripture teaches us, for example, in James, that faith works itself out in what we do, particularly how we treat those who are the weaker, the more vulnerable. And John teaches us in 1 John that our love is shown in how we treat our brothers and sisters who are in need. And so here it's highlighted that how one treats their brothers and sisters, the brothers and sisters of King Jesus, becomes the basis for judgment. And the basis for judgment is not some great and spectacular thing, really, but it's just sort of those mundane acts of daily kindness towards others. The kinds of things that you see listed here, and I don't think this list is by any means exhaustive, but when you see somebody or encounter somebody who's hungry and who's thirsty, and you take care of that need in the way that you can. Or when they're a stranger, when they're in need of hospitality and you let them in, you invite them in. And keep in mind that in the ancient world, in the world of Jesus, that there are no hotels or Motel 6s to stop at along the interstate, right? And so you're very much dependent on others when you're out traveling and about to invite you in and take care of you, to bring them under your roof so that they have someone to watch out for them, so they have a place to be and to stay where they're safe. Or the idea of being naked, or my translation, that I needed clothes. Those people who don't have the basic necessities of life, and then those who step forward to provide those for them. Think of those in poverty situations and so forth. And those who are sick, and some of your translations, particularly if you have an older one, may simply say that they visited them. But really, as the NIV has it here, I think it's more the idea that they take care of them, that they meet the needs that they have. And then finally, that those who are in prison, which... I'm all for prison ministry, and I know this church does that, and that's a marvelous thing. Keep in mind, when they talk about in prison here, it's a bit of a different situation. That in the ancient world, when you went to prison, prison was not a place where you went for punishment. Prison's where they held you until they decided what to do with you, if they were going to do anything with you. So you remember the story of Joseph in the Old Testament, and the cupbearer and the baker that are there in prison with him. Well, remember that they're just there until the Pharaoh decides what to do with them, and one is released and one is executed. And likewise, when Paul is in prison with Silas in Philippi, they're being held there until the authorities can figure out what to do with them. And what that often means is that whether or not while you were being held for however long you were being held, your needs had to be taken care of. And the prison may or may not do that. And so you depended on the goodwill, the graces of others that you knew to come in and take care of those needs. And particularly if you think about the Christian community who Matthew is addressing, those who have cut off probably all their political and social and civic and religious ties to be followers of Jesus, the people they would normally expect to supply and care for them are gone. And so they depend especially on their brothers and sisters in Christ to do this. Now, again, as you go through this list, I don't think I would read this as a checklist. I have to do this one, and I do this one, and I do this one. My mom, who's a wonderful person, was talking one time about, she was talking about Matthew 25, and she said, I've provided food for people, and I've provided clothes for people, and I've taken care of people when they're sick, but I really haven't ever visited or cared for anybody in prison. I said, Mom, it's not a checklist. You don't have to sort of... And she goes, I know, but, and this is just the way she is. And so she started setting up Bible studies in the local jail. And it was great because she referred to the prisoners as her jailbirds. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's what she called them. And she formed these nice relationships with them. And what I appreciate is that the idea that to be there for the sake of others and to care for others, which again and again she exemplified. And the other thing that you'll notice in this list is that there's nothing particularly spectacular about what's done here. These are things that you don't have to have any special gifts or talents to do. Anybody can do these things. Anybody can provide food for someone who is in need of food. Anybody can provide clothing for someone who needs clothing. Anybody can visit those who are sick and care for those who have special concerns or needs. I had a dear friend one time when we lived in Richmond, Virginia, who one time posted on Facebook. She just had this line. She said, I wish I could do something spectacular for God. And trying to be as gentle as I could with her, I just responded and said, you're raising two daughters right now. And she's a medical doctor, and I said, and you're caring for your patients in your practice. And you're the one who's helping organize meals for the hospital hospitality house, this ministry in Richmond that took care of people who either needed a place to stay while they were receiving their chemo treatments or for family members who had people in the hospital, and she would help plan a meal for them. And then there's this single mother in our church with four children, and you and your husband go out of your way to take care of them and to help them. I said, I don't know what you mean by spectacular, but you need to understand you are doing everything God has called and asked you to do with what he's equipped you with. And that's amazing, I think. And it's interesting, and I can't find quite couldn't find the reference again, but Martin Luther has been attributed with this idea that out of Matthew 25 of raising your children very much covers much of what we see in Matthew 25. You feed them, you clothe them, you take care of them when they're sick. Hopefully you're not visiting them in prison, but maybe that would be the case for some as well. Or for any of those that we find in need, when you care for aged parents, the same sort of thing, right? And again, none of these are particularly spectacular by the way the world describes spectacular, but keep in mind in the parable before this that the two-talent man got just as much credit as the five-talent man because he did what he had with what he was given and did it to the glory of God. And so in our parable then, we see that that we're serving Jesus, even though we're not seeing Jesus necessarily as we do it, right? I often hear this sort of line that I just want to be Jesus to people. I want to be Jesus to the people I encounter. I want to be Jesus. And I guess that's fine and I understand where that's coming from. But what's really interesting to me in this text is that we're not being Jesus to those that we serve. Those that we serve are being Jesus to us. And allowing us to serve them. And Jesus says, notice this language here. Whatever you do for one of the least of these, you do for me. I was hungry. I was thirsty. I needed a place to stay. I was sick and in prison. So when we serve these brothers and sisters, when we serve these others who are in need, we are serving Jesus. We get to serve him. And who are these brothers and sisters that we serve? Well, there's kind of two minds on this. Some suggest that Jesus is really talking about serving fellow disciples, fellow Christians. And certainly there are places in Matthew that would suggest that sort of thing. In Matthew chapter 10, he talks about those who welcome his disciples welcome him. And then in Matthew 12, verses 49 through 50, anyone who does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother or my sister or my mother. And so he uses that family language to talk about his disciples. And I think that's certainly there, that we're certainly called, I mean, it's part of our witness to the world, to take care of one another. But remember this scene and the way this scene is set, that this is the universal judgment, that all the nations are gathered here. And that the kinds of things that are relieved, the kind of ministries that are done here address suffering that are universal, sufferings that are universal. Hunger, thirst, and so forth. That's not particular to the church, right? And also that the people that are serving, that are being blessed, don't know they're serving Jesus. Which may be suggestive as well, that this maybe is not just about in-house, but it's about not only our service to our fellow believers, but to the world at large. And so maybe with Paul in Galatians 6, do good to all, especially to those of the household of believers. Or as we look at the story of Israel in the Old Testament, where Israel is called to care for their own widows and their own orphans and their own poor, but then they're also called to care for the alien, the outsider, the one who's not a part of the community. And so I really think probably it's a both and here. And the remarkable thing is that either the sheep or the goats know that they're serving Jesus. When did we see you? They ask. And so it seems to be that they're acting not out of calculation so much, at least on the front end, but out of their nature. Just the kind of people they are, the character that's been formed within them. Because, right, if the king comes to you and says, help me, then you're going to help the king. If he comes in his royal robes, and especially he's got angels and things like that, right? But what if he comes incognito? What if he comes in disguise? What if he comes in ways you wouldn't expect? That's where the real test comes, right? And so a character formed by Christ and his cross is by its nature self-giving. And perhaps some do it even just out of a sense of what is right without even knowing Jesus explicitly, again, in this address to the nations. But then on the other hand are those who serve out of calculation. Jesus, if I'd known it was you, then certainly I would have fed you and clothed you and taken care of you. If I'd only known it was you. And Jesus again says, always assume it's me. So maybe a word for us to hear out of this text, at least one of the things to hear, is that whenever we become aware of a situation of need, hunger, thirst, people needing clothes, people needing to be taken care of and so forth, that we ought to assume that that's Jesus calling us to meet him. That we are being addressed by Jesus in those situations. And so when we see or encounter those images of the hungry and the naked and the sick and the vulnerable, that we don't shut those out or try to avoid them, as maybe we often do. That we find ways to help and to engage. And of course, there are numbers of ways of doing this. Great ministries like Disaster Relief and World Vision and the ministries you carry on in this church. But what I'd like to suggest as you think about that is that those are wonderful and they do things that we can't do individually, is that you don't also miss the individual aspect of this, the seeing the face of Jesus in the other by coming to know and to meet those that you serve. One writer says that the great tragedy, or one of the great tragedies of the church, is not that they don't love the poor, but they don't know the poor. So to find those ways to personally engage as well, where we're meeting people face to face and seeing in them the face of Jesus. And of course, this doesn't mean giving somebody whatever they ask for, right? There has to be wisdom. There has to be discerning out of love of God and love of neighbor what's best for them. But that can't be done without getting to know them, without spending time in relationship with them. So we find those ways that are truly relational ways to serve, and in doing that, that becomes a daily formation into the character of Christ so that it simply becomes second nature to us. And I'm sure, and I know that in so many ways this church is already doing this, so I guess part of what I'm saying here is just keep doing what you're doing and to be really intentional about it. I heard a story one time of a woman who went out to her mailbox one day, and she found a letter, and the letter was from Jesus. And Jesus just said, "Dear Mary, I'm going to be in the neighborhood today, and I'm going to stop by and see you and visit with you for a while." And oh, she was so excited about this. Jesus was going to come see her. A little bit nervous, too, because she looked at the house, and the house was kind of cluttered, and she was a little bothered by that. So she straightened up as best she could, and then she thought, I don't have anything to serve him, so I need to go out and grocery shop. And so she got her purse and her keys, and she's heading out the door when she gets a phone call. And it's the son of her next-door neighbor, and they've lived next door for years and years and years. She watched the son grow up. The woman next door is a bit older, and the son says to her, to Mary, he says, "Can you go over and sit with Mom for a little while?"
she called and she's really sick right now. She's not feeling well. And I'm afraid for her to be by herself. He said, I'm driving into town. I'll be there as soon as I can get there. But if you could just go sit with her, that'd be great. And she goes, well, okay. Yes, I'll do it. And so she goes over next door and she sits with her neighbor for quite a while, it turns out, and she fixes her some tea, and they enjoy their tea together, and to keep her occupied, they play some dominoes and talk for a while, and finally, several hours later, the son shows up, and he says, I'm so sorry, traffic was awful, and I got here as quick as I could, and she says, it's fine, but I need to go now, because I've got a guest coming, and she looks at her watch, and it's already getting late. She says, there's no way I'm going to have time to fix dinner for Jesus if he gets here. I hope he hasn't already come. And so she rushes off to Kentucky Fried Chicken, and says, I'll just get a prepared meal. I'll just get some chicken and some sides. I'll set that for him. I'm sure that'll be fine. And after she purchases her chicken, she starts out and she sees this man and this woman sitting on the curb. And the man says, ma'am, can you help us a little bit? He said, I just lost my job. The relief checks haven't started coming in yet. And we just need some help kind of bridging the gap. And she says, well, what do you need? And he said, we're just really hungry right now, so just something to eat would be great. And she looks there, and he's got his arm around his wife because his wife doesn't have a coat, and it's cold, and she's shivering. So the woman says, sure, come on back in. And so she takes him in. She sits him down. She buys him a meal. She sits and talks with him for a little while. And as she's starting to head out, she says, I've got to go. I've got some company coming. I hope this will help you. She notices the woman and, again, doesn't have a coat, so she just takes off her coat, and she says, here, why don't you take this and wear this? I've got another one at home. It'll be fine. And so she drives, and she starts on the way home, and she notices off on the side of the road a woman standing by her car with her cell phone who's crying, and it's a lady that she knows, just kind of knows from work. And so she pulls over, and she said, do you need some help? And she said, well, the car's broken down, and the baby's in the back seat, and he hasn't been fed in a while, and I don't know what to do. And she said, well, do you want me to stay here with you while you wait for the tow truck, or do you want me to just take you on home? And she said, if you could take me home, that would be great. I'll take care of the car later, but I need to get him home and get him fed. And she said, fine. And so they move the car seat into the car, get it strapped in. They put the baby in. She drives, which is a fair way out of her way, home. It's already getting dark, and she says, I think I probably missed Jesus. And so she comes. She pulls in the driveway. She walks up to the door, and there's a note on the door, and it says, Dear Mary, thank you for the wonderful day. I really enjoyed the tea with you. The dominoes were a lot of fun. It was a wonderful chicken meal. And thank you for that coat and the ride home. I had a blessed day with you. And I think that's sort of the idea maybe of what we're getting at in this text. Sometimes you hear language or people talking about what they call thin places. Thin places are those places where heaven and earth especially come together, one feels like, where heaven is meeting earth, or where you have a special close encounter with God in some way. And I believe these are all over, but what I've noticed when people talk about thin places a lot of times is they're places that are kind of hard to get to. They're places that have spectacular mountain vistas, or they're beaches with their roaring waves, or they're holy sites like Israel or places like that. And all those are fine, and I believe one can encounter God in all those places. But what dawned on me about those kinds of thin places is that they're kind of expensive to get to. And they're really only people of means, people of wealth, can enjoy those thin places. And then I come to a place or a passage like this, and I see that, no, where are those thin places? Where are those places where heaven meets earth, where we have those close encounters with God? Although it may be in those other places as well, what our text tells us is that when we stop to help somebody, when we provide food and clothing and shelter and care, we are encountering Jesus. And heaven and earth come together in that moment. And so I remind us of the words of Jesus Christ earlier on in the Gospel of Matthew in the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. And a reminder that from our own text, that it's in this daily discipline of care for others, of watching out for others, that we encounter Jesus, that we hear that well done, good and faithful servant. It's where we hear, come and enjoy the inheritance that your Father has prepared for you. Because in serving others, we are, in fact, serving Christ. And so this morning, that's the invitation, to keep doing what you've been doing and to be intentional about it, to serve our Lord Jesus Christ day in and day out with all those people that we encounter wherever we meet those needs. And if you need the prayers, the help, the encouragement of the congregation to do that, then we're certainly glad to do that.
And if we can help you in any way, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing.